Views and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and contributors, and not necessarily those of WFSU Public Media.
What's the 411? You're tuned in to 411 Teen, a weekly program for teens, families, educators, and other interested folks. We dive into the issues and events that shape, challenge, and sometimes disrupt our daily lives. I'm Dr. Liz Hollyfield. We talk to teens about grades. We talk to teens about college. We talk to them about careers. But how often do we talk to them about money? Financial literacy. The average American household carries thousands of dollars in credit card debt. Billions are paid each year in preventable bank fees. And young folks are bombarded daily by advertising engineered to shape their spending habits. Today, we are joined by Robbie Hyman, author of The Money Savvy Teen, Building a Healthy Relationship with Money. It's a practical guide to help young folks develop a healthy relationship with money before costly mistakes are made. Author Robbie Hyman joins us via the Zoom platform from Phoenix, Arizona. Robbie, welcome to 411 Teen.
Thank you so much for having me. It's great to be here.
Yes, looking forward to you sharing all your tidbits. So let's get started. First of all, my question is, would you just really share the impetus for you to write this book specifically for teens and young adults?
Sure. So this topic of money management skills has been more or less a low-level obsession of mine since I was a teenager, because I realized at a very young age they should be teaching us how to handle money. I recognized that within a couple of years of my time in high school, I was going to be getting credit cards, I was going to be getting a bank account, I was probably going to have a job, and I was going to become responsible for money. And I had no idea how it worked. I didn't know how to save. I didn't know how to budget. I didn't know how. I'm old enough that I was writing checks when I got started, physical checks, which young people probably have no idea.
They don't know how to write them now.
No, they certainly don't. And I don't know that it's even worth teaching them, because that's not coming back. But no. They still have checking accounts and they still have debit cards, which is essentially the same thing. And I realized that I could get into serious trouble if I wasn't careful. And I could see it happening as I got a little older with most of my friends. I grew up not poor, but working class, and really nobody I knew had enough money to be buying the stuff that they were when they got to be 18, 20. And I could see it happening. It's like when you're a parent and you're watching your kid playing, you know, through the window, and you can see what's about to happen. Something's caught his attention. He's about to go running, but in order to get to that thing, he's going to trip over the thing in the middle, and you can't get to him in time. It's just going to have to play out. And that's how I felt about it. And I guess consciously I stopped thinking about it, because what could I do? No one was listening to me. But I must have just been, you know, keeping those ideas percolating in the back of my mind all the time. I was developing a vocabulary for ways of addressing these common problems with personal finance skills. Mm-hmm. And I was, I guess, just formulating these ideas. And then I think I got a renewed sense of urgency and energy when my daughter was born 16 years ago. And then I realized, I took another look, because I started thinking about the world differently. We've got another generation coming up, and guess what? They're going to have the same problems. And I realized, I don't think we've solved this at the education level, and I certainly don't think we've solved it at the parental level, because nobody I knew had any idea how to teach their youngsters how to manage money, because we ourselves never learned, not in any formal way, and we don't have the vocabulary to teach it in any sort of effective way to our kids. So I thought, okay, it's time to sit down and put all these things that have been percolating in my head, right, into some organized form, and that's my contribution.
Well, thank you for being precocious, because I don't think, I'm serious, we can benefit from it.
I don't think the average teen,
you know, is that insightful. And I think that's great, you know. You know, there's a myriad of books out now about financial literacy and what you how to handle your money. Not a lot of them for teens, but you're seeing more and more come out for teens. What distinguishes your book from others?
Okay, so this is where I have to admit first that I am not in this field, in the field of finance. I have no educational background. Mm-hmm. I have no professional experience. I've never worked as a banker or a certified financial planner or a stockbroker, accountant, anything like that. So I come at this very differently. And I've read a lot of the books you're talking about, the ones that have popped up in the last, I'd say the last decade, specifically aimed at teens. And most of these books focus on the tools, because that's what someone in the finance world would think personal finance means. It means understanding how to open a bank account, how to start
boring.
An investment.
I was going to say, because yours was, you know, it was captivating and you caught the attention of teens, because I've read them and I'd be like, oh God, who wants to read this?
Right.
You know, I applaud you on that. I mean, they were engaging, and you caught the attention of teens. So go right ahead. Excuse me for interrupting, but, you know, I had to add that because that made a difference. I read so many books.
No, I'm so grateful to hear that, because the book hasn't come out yet. I haven't had a lot of feedback from people other than, you know, my family, who has no choice but to read it. but I'm thrilled to hear it. And I have to say, I'm especially thrilled. I'm thrilled to be talking to you of all of the radio hosts I could be talking to, because if you've read it, you know that my bent here, right, is toward the psychology as opposed to the money management specifically, the mechanics of the money. It's more about understanding yourself, understanding human nature, understanding how we make these terrible decisions, which most of us do at some point in our lives when it comes to our money. And that really, I think, is what differentiates this book from any of the other ones, at least that I've seen, because most of the books are talking about just this, in my view, the scattershot of all the personal finance topics that the writer knows, because that's what the writer does all day. So I'm saying, no, that's not where this conversation starts. Nobody gets into trouble, financially speaking. Nobody gets into tens of thousands of dollars of credit card debt because they're spending too much money on the essentials, because they're buying too much extension cord or shampoo. That's not what gets you into trouble. What gets you, or because you've mismanaged your checking account, what gets you into the long-term financial trouble and even financial ruin is not understanding all of these, what I think of as hidden psychological drivers that are actually pushing you to make these terrible decisions with your money. Maybe that's too harsh. Maybe they're not terrible decisions. They're just a long series of poor decisions.
You can end up in a terrible state.
Exactly. So, and that's the problem. That's the problem is that no one is there to tell you, hey, what you did here, you're buying this stuff on social media, you're buying this stuff on Amazon. And none of these purchases in and of themselves are ruinous. But if you add them all up, and if this becomes your habit, you get home from school every day, you plop down on the couch, you take out your phone, and you just start scrolling Instagram until you find something you like, and then you hit the buy. That's the sort of thing that can lead to, you know, long-term financial problems that you might be mired in for decades. And so the way that I set this book up was to spend the first third of it talking about those things. What are these drivers? Some of them are evolutionary biology. Some of them are just a matter of, you know, you being moved to buy things because you're seeking novelty. Right, which would have helped prehistoric humans. Unfortunately, we still have those genes. We still have that wired into our DNA. And some of it is social pressure, right? Peer pressure or influencers on social media. So those are the things that I think are the most important. And frankly, as you point out, you know, I don't want it to be boring. It's so I not. Made a great effort to include stories and to talk about celebrities, real things that have happened to real people. And mm-hmm. I include a lot of jokes because I recognize who are we talking to here? We're talking to young people, and young people are at a point in their lives where they've gotten nothing but academic tomes handed to them by adult authority figures their whole life. The last thing they want is another book, another book of very important life lessons, and blah, blah, blah. So what I'm trying to do is interrupt that pattern. I know they're going to go into reading the book, which they will probably be doing involuntarily because someone told them they have no choice. And so they're expecting to dislike it or to be bored. And I'm also competing against their phone, right, which has every conceivable entertainment ever devised by humans. So I've got to do everything I can to make this as engaging as possible.
Well, and I think you did a good job. Okay.
Thank you. Thank you so much. It's great to hear.
What financial mistakes would you identify that you see young folks making the most often?
I think the big one is not having their arms around the whole picture. Mm-hmm. And this goes back to psychology. I interviewed a friend for the book who's a pediatrician, and he told me that he likened it to other bad habits in general, let's say eating junk foods. He said, if you engage in an activity that some part of your brain recognizes is not healthy for you, but you want to continue to do it because you're chasing the short-term, you know, endorphin hit or dopamine hit, what you can do, the rational centers of your brain can figure out ways of tricking you into thinking that you're engaging in different behaviors. So you can break the behavior into a bunch of arbitrary categories. So if you're eating junk food, let's say that's the problem and that's causing problems for your health, you might say, well, I haven't had a cookie in a while, and you can eat a cookie or three. And then the next day you might say, you know, when was the last time I had a donut? Come on, it's time for a donut. And the truth is, you're eating junk food every day, right? But you've convinced yourself that you're doing all these different activities because you've subdivided it arbitrarily.
Hold your thoughts. This is one of those points where I want to ask you to hold your thoughts.
Sure.
You're tuned in to 411 Teen, and I am talking with author Robbie Hyman. He has written The Money Savvy Teen. We're going to take a brief break, but we'll get right back at you. Just tuning in, the program is 411 Teen, and I am talking with author Robbie Hyman. He has written a super book called The Money Savvy Teen. It's interesting, it's humorous, and it's informative. Robbie, I had to interrupt you in mid-sentence, but you want to continue your thoughts.
Oh, sure. Thank you. So I was saying that if there were one financial mistake that I see repeated mm-hmm. most commonly among young people, and this is probably true of adults as well, but it's especially important that we interrupt the pattern for young people so they don't develop this as a lifelong habit. It's spending or making financial decisions in general without a strategy, without mm-hmm. a sense of the whole picture, and without a sense of how an individual purchase can affect the larger picture. It's like the avalanche, you know, the avalanche mm-hmm. always starts because of one tiny little piece of snow or that shifts just the right way at just the right moment, and it moves an entire mountain. But that piece of snow, that little tiny innocent thing couldn't have caused an avalanche on its own. It's the result of repeated poor behavior. Mm-hmm. In the case of the avalanche, we can't blame the snow. The snow just does what the snow does. But we can teach teens to have a little more control over their behavior and become a little bit more aware of what they're doing and how it can impact the bigger picture. And I think that some of this is our fault as the adults. And this is parents, this is other adults in young people's lives, adult authority figures, relatives. It's also the education system. I think that we have failed to arm these young people in any way to be equipped to handle these situations. And if I can give you one example, one data point that bears this out, I actually did this twice. When I originally wrote the first draft of this book, which was many years ago, probably in 2009 or 2010 when my daughter was born, I found a stat. There was a study conducted, I think it was the University of Buffalo. This was probably 2005, 2006. And they gave a very, very basic financial literacy test to high school students, 17 and 18 year olds, and they scored an F. And these were incredibly simple questions, but these young people just had never been exposed to the answers. So they had no idea. Uh-huh. And more recently, when I started preparing to promote this book last year, I found a similar stat from 2025 from this financial services company, TIAA.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
They run a similar test every couple of years, and they study the whole population, but they break them down by age groups. And the youngest cohort was Gen Z.
Okay.
And keep in mind, Gen Z is not just teens. This is people in their up to their, I think, their late 20s.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
They scored a 38% on this basic financial literacy test. And what's shocking and terrifying is that if you think about what's also happening to those 17 and 18 year olds who are proving, you know, year after year with these tests that they don't know anything about money management, even the most basic concepts, what also happens to them around that same time is they're getting credit cards.
Yep.
Credit card companies are seeking out these people at a time where they are demonstrating, right, very clearly that they don't know yet how to handle money. And so, I think this is a terrifying trend. And as I say, I've been following this now for decades, and I have seen no improvement. In fact,
it
seems that
worse.
We're going backwards. Yeah.
It has. It definitely has. Well, as you talk about the psychology of finances, what role have you seen, and you touched on this a little bit when you talked about the teen coming home from school and they just sit down and they, you know, get into getting on their phone. But what role do you find that emotions play when it comes to spending money with teens?
Oh, it's huge. Mm-hmm. And it might be bigger with teens than most other age groups, because when you're a young person, you're facing all the, you know, all the psychological trauma that we all know, because we've all gone through it ourselves, of trying to figure out who you are, how you fit in, mm-hmm. the last thing you want to do. And there's, by the way, as I understand it, you probably know this better than I do. This is your field. But as I understand it, there's probably an evolutionary biology reason mm-hmm. behind a lot of this as well, because if you go back far enough, you still find that the humans, early humans, they didn't want to stand out too much from the crowd, because that could make you a threat, but that could mean that you're not protected by a group. So you really can't stray too far. So when you're young and you haven't yet fully developed your identity, one of the ways that you can fit in is by doing what everyone else is doing, going to the places everyone else goes, spending money on the same things that everyone else you see is spending their money mm-hmm. on. And so some of the psychology is just a matter of feeling as though you have to spend money just not to be ostracized. And by the way, advertisers absolutely exploit that
mm-hmm, exactly.
in young people. So it's a sort of a two-pronged offensive, right? There's your own psychology working against you, where you think that you have to do whatever your friends are doing, or you're going to be laughed at and, you know, sort of shunned. And then the advertisers are finding ways to target those feelings and trigger those feelings in you to persuade you to buy whatever garbage their clients are paying them to sell.
Well, let's talk about those advertisers, okay?
Sure.
And would you share how advertisers use psychology to influence young, you know, consumers?
Yeah, and I go into this to some degree in the book, and it's one of the earlier chapters, because I'm trying to order this in such a way that I get the most important information out. Because if the young person reading this bails on the book, I still want them to have read some of these things at the front end, mm-hmm. because I think this is the most important. I don't think young people know just how clever and deceptive and manipulative the advertising world is. First of all, it's a $400 billion a year industry. Yeah. And so that's how you have to think about it. Nobody tells young people this. It's a $400 billion machine against you, right? You, yeah. Just the innocent teen going about your day, scrolling through social media, watching videos on TikTok. You have no idea that there are adults who are paid in the psychology field, right?
Yeah.
There are professions.
Yes.
Yeah, consumer psychology. They're raising up an entire army of people whose job it is to hack your brain. And so one of the things that I point out is they break people into psychographics. That's the term for it, which is sort of like demographics, but targeting a person's worldview, a person's psychological makeup. Mm-hmm. So if you're the type of person who's going to respond more to messages that play to your insecurity, then they'll serve those messages up for you. And if you're someone who thinks of himself as a leader, uh-huh. or who has aspirational, focus, then they'll serve those types of messages to you. And advertisers are more sophisticated now than ever because they can figure out who we are. Yeah. They can follow us. They know exactly based on what we post, what we like, what we repost, the websites we visit. There's a great quote from, I don't know, it's got to be 75 years ago from a famous advertiser of his time. His name was John Wanamaker. And he used to say that I know half of my advertising dollars are totally wasted, but the problem is I don't know which half. And that's because, mm-hmm. right, 75 years mm-hmm. ago, what could advertisers do? They blasted their messages out to everybody and just hoped for the best. And now you're getting messages that are targeted, eerily close to your wants and desires and fears and
insecurity. Exactly.
Yeah. So that's, I think, the real danger here is that teens have no idea that this is happening. And a lot of the advertising messages are disguised, right? It's influencer sponsors or it's product placement, right?
Do you have a particular message that you can share? I mean, that are a particular, advertisement that you could share and share with the audience and just how they do this?
Oh, as an example?
Mm-hmm.
Sure. So I'm old enough to remember, this one was really powerful for me. Spike Lee, the movie director, made some commercials for Nike with Michael Jordan. Do you remember those? Did
yes.
you ever see those? Okay.
Yes.
So
yes.
The genius, first of all, you get Spike Lee, that's a heavy hitter, right? Mm-hmm. So he's coming with all kinds of knowledge and creative skills and brilliant technique, right, from his movie directing experience. And he's bringing that to bear, again, I hate to put it this way, but against the consumer, because Nike's goal in bringing in Michael Jordan and Spike Lee is to manipulate us mm-hmm. into wanting those mm-hmm. shoes. And how can they do that? I already have a great pair of shoes. But if I see Michael Jordan flying through the air and Spike Lee frames this brilliantly, so there's the long shot, so you can see he's starting at, I don't know, he's starting in the parking lot when he does his leap, and then he just keeps flying through. Right.
Yeah,
and then there's music
that.
Playing, and then you're closing in on the shoes, because remember, it's the shoes. Michael Jordan could barely stand up before he got Nikes, don't you know? It's not Michael Jordan's unique, once in three generations of talent that allowed him to dominate the NBA for all those years. It was Nike, don't you know? So that's just an incredibly brilliant piece of filmmaking and mm-hmm. an incredibly brilliant piece of content, and it's a lot of fun to watch. But if you're an impressionable young person and you have aspirations even to be a better player on your high school team, right, forget about the NBA, I think that those types of messages are incredibly dangerous. Now, they're less dangerous if you recognize them for what they are. So this is one of the suggestions that I have for young people and for parents, is to try to seek out advertising. Seek it out, right? Just try to take a
cold, clinical, objective view of what you're watching. Try to figure out, ask yourself questions. What are they trying to elicit here? What emotional hot button are they after? Are these creative, clever, deceptive advertisers trying to make me feel like I could be like Michael Jordan? Are they trying to create some sort of aspirational vision in my head that's going to make me go buy their product? Or are they playing on my insecurity? If you don't do this, everyone's going to laugh at you. You're going to be the odd person out. You don't want that, do you? So ask yourself those questions. Look for things like product placement in television content, in movies, in video games. They're all over video games. Those are paid. When you see billboards in the backgrounds of video games, someone's paying for that. So just seek those things out. That takes you out of the moment, so you're less susceptible to the emotional manipulation. You're sort of like an equal participant. You're not just a passive recipient of the advertiser's messages. There's a joke about hunting that I just saw on the TV series Landman. It's an old joke, but they revived it. And it's basically, the line is basically that hunting is really the only sport where only one of the teams even knows it's playing. And my takeaway is there's something similar going on with advertising. Right. If you're scrolling through social media, or you're watching television shows on streaming services, or you're going to the movies, you might be encountering a lot of advertising that you don't realize is advertising. And if you're not aware of it, I think it's going to have more power over you, because then it can get around the rational centers of your brain and target your emotions, your psychology, your weaknesses. Whereas if you are aware of it and you're actually looking for it, you're stealing some of that power. So I'm just saying, advertisers are trying to get into your brain. You know, let's get into their brains. Let's try to hack their brains, figure out what they're up to.
What they're up to, where they're coming from. Right.
Yeah.
Well, let me ask you, as we talk up, you mentioned parents. How do parents' behaviors shape teen attitudes?
When it comes to money specifically, I think in most cases, unfortunately, it's for the worse.
Yep.
Because most of us have some anxiety about money. It's the very rare person who's led a financially pure, perfect, mistake-free life. And so I think when we try to talk to our kids, especially when they're teenagers and they've got their guard up, right, ready to tune us out. When we try to communicate our, you know, well-meaning lessons to them, right, or our advice, our life advice, they probably pick up a lot of our anxiety, and they pick up a lot of our what amounts to our personal baggage, right, from our own bad experiences with money or our own fears around money. And I think that they tune it out. And if parents are, if they treat money as a taboo subject, they don't talk about how much things cost. They don't talk about, you know, in broad terms, how much money they have, how much money they earn. I think that kids tend to think of it as some sort of a forbidden subject. Now, I don't suggest talking, telling your kids. I don't know. This is, frankly.
I was going to say, you don't have to give them details. You don't have to give them your IRS before.
Yeah. I mean, I was going to ask you, because I know this is your field.
But,
I mean, do you think that parents should tell kids roughly, you know, I'm earning good money. You can make it relative.
Yeah,
I'm earning more money than I was.
Yeah,
that's okay.
That's okay.
And I also think that when parents make a mistake, it's probably worth sharing. If it's not a catastrophic mistake. I would advise parents, for example, if a parent buys something, you know, makes a stupid purchase, and the thing gets to the house, and the parent says, "I don't know what I was thinking," right? It's worth sharing that with your team.
Mm-hmm.
They got me somehow. Somebody got me. My own clever psychology. I was chasing an endorphin hit because I was in a bad mood and I just needed to escape. Tell your kids about that. And I think you can take some of the sting away from the experience for yourself, for one thing, because you're turning it into a learning experience for your youngster. And I also do think that the kid picks up on the dangers of, you know, not thinking through a purchase.
Exactly.
Because they've seen it in action.
Exactly. And I do think, and I don't know if you're seeing this, but I do think that there is some financial anxiety among today's teens when it comes to, you know, just dealing with money and managing.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. I think they are in many ways are a lot more savvy than we are aware of. They just don't know maybe how to express it, but, you know, they do have anxiety just about, you know, spending. So you're seeing the same thing? You agree or?
I completely agree with you. I think it's probably higher now than it's been maybe ever. And I think one key reason is this generation, maybe the last generation as well, but I think this generation even more so, has some things to contend with that no humans have ever faced. And I don't think the human, as I say, evolution is slow. I don't think we've evolved yet to handle this sort of pressure. They are now, young people today, are basically able to buy anything they want, assuming they have credit, which many of them do. They'll all get it when they're 18, maybe even 17. They can buy things they can't pay for. They can buy it with essentially no natural guardrails against against the purchase. They don't have to do anything. And when I'm old enough to remember when you actually had to go to a store if you wanted something.
That's right.
You know what happened to me this morning? I was walking my dog, and I don't know if this is happening in your neighborhood.
Hold your thoughts here, though. Hold them. We're going to take a break, and then we're going to come back. You're tuned in to 411 Teen, and I am having a delightful and informative conversation with Robbie Hyman. We're going to take a brief break, but we will return momentarily.
Views and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and contributors, and not necessarily those of WFSU Public Media.
We're back. You're tuned in to 411 Teen, and Robbie, it's on you. You were going to share with me what happened.
I was with my dog. I was going to tell you that on our morning walk, in my neighborhood, Amazon has started delivering packages by drone.
Oh, really?
I'm not sure if you've seen this.
No, yes. I haven't seen that yet.
Yes. It is a frightening sight if you don't know it. These things look like oversized insects, and they make a terrible noise. They sound like cicadas, really.
Okay.
Much more scary. And I watched this drone hover over a neighbor's backyard and slowly lower itself. And I watched a hatch open at the bottom of it and a package get slowly lowered to the ground. I assume it hit the ground because I'm looking through a wall. But what they do is they have a rope, I guess, so that the thing doesn't, it's not just gravity. It's not just slamming to the ground. And they don't want to drop the drone all the way to the ground. So I watched this whole thing happen, and then the drone closed its hatch and got altitude again and took off. And my dog flipped out because my dog is onto something, right? This is not a natural thing. This shouldn't be happening.
Right.
Right. Dr. Hollyfield, I am telling you that products today are literally falling out of the sky. Right?
Yes, they are.
This is the end times. This is wrong. This should not be happening. And so when you think about young people who have no other experience in life, they don't have the experience of having to wait to buy something.
No,
they don't have
the
experience of having a long distance drive to get a specific product or not being able to get it at all because it's too far away. Right? They're living in the era where they have payment apps on their phone. They have, you know, buy now buttons everywhere on their screen.
They can
go from desire, right? From let's call it an advertiser implanted desire in their head to getting the product in less than a day. So there are no guardrails anymore. There are no barriers. And I think they recognize that. I think they recognize that they have to supply all of the discipline, all of the willpower, all of the strategic thinking, and they're just not ready yet. They're not developed enough yet to be able to do that. And as I say, no one is helping them. No one is telling them that these are the things that are affecting them, and this might be why they're feeling anxiety. And before they know it, they're going to have the tools of, as I say, that these are credit cards, they're the tools of potential financial ruin. And, you know, they're going to be able to spend, and they're going to have to figure out on their own if we don't tell them, mm-hmm. right, when it's okay to spend money and when it's not okay to spend money, and when they're being driven by some sort of, you know, hidden psychological driver or an advertiser or social media or popular culture or some other force that they're not even fully aware is what's making them feel the need to go out and buy this thing that they don't even want, most likely, and won't care about very soon after they buy it.
Any suggestions that parents may use, anybody, educators may use, adults may use, to teach teens to pause before a purchase? I can't think of any better way to say it, but if they just stop for maybe a minute and reevaluate, okay, that I don't need this. Right. I don't want this. Do you have any, is there any suggestion, or is there any financial rule of never do this? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. You mean like don't drive angry, don't go to sleep angry.
Right.
Yes. I don't know if there are rules in the financial world, but I know that there are definitely things you can do. And those are good ideas. Those are that's a very, you know, you framed mm-hmm. it perfectly. If you can just wait. I remember I read in the in my research for the book, there is a psychologist named Stosny. I think his name is Steve Stosny. And he wrote a paper that he summarized later in Psychology Today, where he basically said most of what we're doing in our daily lives are habits. Mm-hmm. We're not even conscious that we're doing it. And I think he says something on the order of 40% of the things that you do every day is a habit. And he said that a habit happens in the brain, right? You make the sort of the autopilot decision to engage in a habit thousands of times faster than a conscious decision that you have to deliberate through. And I think what's happening with young people in a lot of cases, once they get their hands on some sort of a payment app or a debit card or a credit card, is they are making these purchases out of habit. Mm-hmm. As I say, their habit might be when I get a little bit depressed. This is a mm-hmm. big part of what triggers spending. It's these psychological, mm-hmm. you know, hot buttons, right? I'm feeling mm-hmm. anxious about something. I'm mm-hmm. feeling stressed.
Stressed. Mm-hmm.
And depressed. And so I do this to escape for a very short time. If I go buy something new, and that if that becomes a habit, yeah. The problem is now you take these two things together and you realize, okay, so I've developed this habit, which happens thousands of times faster in my, you know, in my actual brain than the rational centers of my brain can, you know, kick into gear, right? So I'm making these purchases without giving it any thought. So my advice, my wife has a great tactic for this. She will sometimes find herself putting something in a shopping cart, say on Amazon. And if she's looking at it and thinking, I'm not sure about this, this might be something else. This might be some other trigger, mm-hmm. right? That's putting this in the shopping cart. Not that I've actually thought through and I want it. She takes just enough time to say, let me give it 24 hours, and she'll leave it in the cart. Yeah. And then if she comes back the next day, she tells me most of the time she comes back and might not even be 24 hours because she forgets it was even there. Because she wasn't thinking rationally when she put it in the cart. And when she gets back to that Amazon page and she realizes that there's something in her cart and she opens it up, she'll say, I don't even know why I was thinking about buying this. So a lot of it, it's mm-hmm. similar to my advice about mm-hmm. advertising. It's mm-hmm. just, it's exactly as you said, pause. If you feel like something is pushing you to buy, pause and ask yourself, is somebody manipulating me into making this purchase? Am I manipulating me?
Am I? Yes. Yeah.
You know, and that's usually all it takes. It's like breaking yourself free from a spell.
And what about, yes, my next question, you know, we're running out of time and I'm enjoying this so much. I look up and I'm like, oh gosh, this happens to me all the time. Okay.
But well, I'm enjoying it as well.
What about distinguishing between the need, the want, and an impulse?
Ooh, that's a great question. Mm-hmm. That's a great question. I would say you'll know the need, right? I mean, if we're being honest with ourselves, as I say, if mm-hmm. you're getting extension cord, that's not an impulse buy. Nobody says, my friend got extension cord, I need extension cord. Or Michael Jordan's carrying extension cord around, I want extension cord because I want to be like Mike, right? Those are pretty straightforward, and those don't get us into trouble. Distinguishing between a want and an impulse is an interesting one, because I actually do, this is one of those little bits of vocabulary I told you at the beginning that I formulated. I have this concept that I include in the book called Tomorrow's Junk, mm-hmm. which is just the concept that you're going to buy something today because you're excited. And this is going to be a more of a fun purchase. Eventually, it's going to wear out. You're going to get tired of it. You're going to move on to the next version of it. And it's going to become junk, right? So the question is, there is a formula. I don't know exactly how to articulate it, but you do want to, again, pause, as you said, right? Your one word, pause, would solve so much of the credit card debt problem and all the other financial problems that we have as consumers. But if you pause and then ask yourself, you know, let's do an honest assessment. Am I going to get enough utility or enjoyment out of this thing mm-hmm. that it's going to be worth it, because it will eventually wear down and become tomorrow's junk? Right? Or next month's junk, or a year from now's junk, whatever. And if you can't say that, then it's probably an impulse. And then you want to go back to the other factors that we're discussing. You want to ask yourself, am I buying this because I want it? Or am I buying this because, something else is going on, and I'm trying to escape something. I'm trying to, create some sort of, aspirational idea in my head, or, something like that. Is mm-hmm. it a psychological thing? So it always starts with pausing. Every one of my pieces of advice starts with, let's get out of the habit, right? Let's get out of the idea that I'm just on autopilot. I see it, I like it, I say, wow, I click buy now.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then it falls out of the sky.
Yeah. I know, that's wild. Oh, my dogs would freak out. I could imagine. Yeah. I would imagine. Yeah. Listen, we have been talking and talking and talking. We got to talk about your book. I know it's not out yet, but by the time this airs, it will be out, okay? Because it takes a while. Talk about your book. Where can one access it? Just tell us about it.
Well, thank you for the opportunity. It's called The Money Savvy Teen, and it's published by Bloomsbury. Actually, it's published by the academic arm. So mm-hmm. Bloomsbury Academic is the official imprint. And as far as I know, it's available everywhere. I go online, to be perfectly honest, and I look every day mm-hmm. to see where it's showing up. And it's on Amazon and Barnes & Noble and Books A Million and Walmart and the Bloomsbury website itself. And I believe on the Bloomsbury website, there's a bit of a discount. So I think you can find it pretty much anywhere. Google The Money Savvy Teen and you'll find a number of options. Thank you for the opportunity to tell folks.
Yeah. Well, I think people need to know. I think it's really very well done. And believe me, I wouldn't say that if I didn't believe it. I think you did a great job. You did a great job. In these last few minutes, of course, I have 20 questions, but can't get through all of those. If you had one thing you would suggest parents cease doing, what would it be?
Well, I guess it would be, and I hate to say this, but I guess it would be lecturing.
Okay.
When it comes to money, as I say, I think we all have some insecurities and some anxiety around money related topics. And I would suggest, if I could flip the question a little, I would suggest that parents try to create an open dialogue about money and make it an ongoing conversation. As I say, sit with your kids if you can and gamify this whole thing. Say, let's sit down and watch a movie. And while we're watching the movie, let's see who can spot the first product placement. Who can find the first hidden disguised advertising message, right? Things like that. And as I say, if you make a mistake as a parent, you're going to, while your kid's a teenager, I can't imagine there's a single parent who can go through 4 or 5 years without a personal finance error, share it with your kid, right? Mm-hmm. As long as it's nothing catastrophic, right? I mean, right. If it's something you're comfortable sharing, it's worth talking about these things. It's worth exposing your kids to the mistakes that adults make. Talk about things in the news. If you find out that there's yet another celebrity, and you will, because this happens all the time, who's had some huge financial catastrophe, talk about it with your kid and see what lessons you both mm-hmm. can learn from it, what insights you can derive from it. I would say to do it that way, but I would say it's very important to watch your tone and your mood when you're talking about money with your teen, especially mm-hmm. if you're prone to be nervous about money. You don't want it to come across as though you're pre-scolding mm-hmm. your teenager for doing something they haven't even done yet, because what you're really trying to do, and you're just not able to articulate it, is let them know how serious the topic is and how dangerous it can be to be financially irresponsible.
Okay. We didn't have time to really address this, but I want to just at least pose it and see what you think.
Sure.
One of the difficulties that teens have are, from where I sit, seems to be group spending pressures, like going to concerts, going to trips, going out eating. How do you teach teens to navigate, or help teens navigate, what I would call group spending pressure? I don't know if I'm stating it right, but
you are stating it beautifully. Okay. In fact, that specific example that you gave about going out to eat or going to mm-hmm. concerts, that's an example I use toward the end of the book in the social section. And one of the things that I suggest is, it's actually a good filtering mechanism for friends. If you have friends who want you to be, comfortable and want you to do what you want to do, and you tell them, I know you're all going to this Taylor Swift thing, but I can't raise the cash, I can't do it, and they're not okay with that, then those are not good friends.
Yeah.
So it is a way to suss out, you know, who are the people of the moral character, right? The good friendship stock that you want, and who aren't. And one of the tactical things I suggest is having a standard phrase. I suggest this for a lot of areas, borrowing, lending, and this, mm-hmm. and the idea of feeling peer pressure. If your friends say, we're all going to this whatever event, and you know it's going to cost hundreds of dollars, and you don't have it, and your family can't lend it to you, they don't have it, you tell them, you know, I just don't have the cash. Mm-hmm. And if they say, oh, you got to go. It's so important. Everybody's going to be there. Mm-hmm. You just refer to your standard phrase. Just fall back on it. I don't have the cash. Mm-hmm. And you could say it over and over. And your friends are going to understand that. And it also sort of gives you a comfort zone to return to as often as you have to, so that you can't get pulled off of your path. Someone says, oh, but what if you do this? If you don't have a standard phrase, you can be talked into things mm-hmm. Or shamed or whatever. But if you fall back on your standard phrase, I think the true friends in your life are going to respect that. And they're going to say, okay, we should probably leave this poor person alone and stop haranguing them.
Well, I was going to ask you, do you think teens, and you got 30 seconds, do you think teens should ever lend money to friends in the first place?
No.
Okay.
I think that there's a safe lending and an unsafe lending. If mm-hmm. you trust the person and you know the person is going to pay you back immediately, if it's just a matter of borrowing for convenience, my wallet's at home.
Okay.
That's fine. Otherwise, no. Huge friendship problems mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. result from that sort of lending.
One last question. Do you have one phrase that you think teens should memorize? If they got to memorize one thing when it comes to financial literacy and dealing with money, financial situations, what should it be?
I'll tell you what, Dr. Hollyfield, I think you coined it during this call, and it is pause.
Oh, okay.
I can't even, I hadn't even thought of this, but I cannot imagine how many problems that could solve. If you just step out of the stream, out of your habits, out of the mm-hmm. the advertiser spell, out of the social media pressure or the peer pressure, and you just say, what am I doing? Let's just take a minute to think about this. Then you activate all those wonderful rational centers of your brain and you can start making an actually, you know, financially savvy decision.
Okay, well, I thank you because it's time out and money is more than math. When teens and young adults understand credit, fees, advertising, psychology, and social pressure, they're not just better consumers, they're more empowered decision makers. Thanks to Robbie Hyman, author of The Money Savvy Teen, for helping us rethink how and when we teach financial literacy. To my listening audience, as always, much appreciation for the privilege of your time and ear. Tune in next week, same time, same place, to get the 411 on 411 Teen. The 411 Teen was produced by Dr. Liz Holifield. You can listen to previous episodes of 411 Teen at WFSU.org.